Welcome to Rethink Retail, the show where we dive into the stories and strategies behind some of the most successful brands on the planet. From brick-and-mortar giants to e-commerce disruptors, we uncover the secrets to their success and deliver the keys to true retail transformation. So ask yourself, are you ready to rethink retail? The future of retail starts now.
Welcome to Retail Therapy, a Rethink Retail exclusive podcast series where we dive into a retailer facing a huge challenge or smacking it out of the park and trying to understand what it is that makes them tick. This week, we'll be looking at a range of technologies rather than a retailer itself. We're diving into all of the verses from AR and VR to the metaverse, Apple Vision Pro, virtual commerce, and everything in between. These pieces of innovation have already created enormous buzz in retail and are potentially going to change the ways in which we shop. But in what ways do we see these alternates changing our actual reality? Checking in for today's session are this week's retail therapists, Rebecca Kondrat, Alan Smithson, and Michael Zakur. Michael is a thought leader and hands-on practitioner in building businesses for the global digital economy. Michael's experience spans key aspects of digital commerce, marketing, retail, and consumer strategy. He has more than 25 years of experience in digital commerce and retail and has innovated new go-to-market activation and marketing strategies and tactics for some of the world's biggest brands, FMCG, and retail companies. After a 20-year career operating a world-class organization such as Apple, Starbucks, Warby Parker, and Outdoor Voices, Rebecca Kondrat launched Recon Retail to build omnichannel environments for digitally native brands. She and her team of retail operators bring expertise and execution to brands that want to expand physical retail, adapt to a new set of customer expectations, and drive revenue and multi-channel customer acquisition through their stores. Alan Smithson is a father, a founder, and a futurist. His purpose in life is to inspire and educate people to think and act in a socially, economically, and environmentally responsible way. Alan makes creator tools, including Metaverse, a 3D creation engine for the spatial web, The Mall, the world's largest virtual mall, Metopia, a virtual collaboration platform, Your Director AI, an automatic AI video switching, and Emulator, a touchscreen system for the music industry. So with these incredible guests, let's dive right in to the verses. Oh, I'm so excited for this conversation. What a panel we have lined up for us too. Alan, Michael, Rebecca, thank you all for joining us. We're going to start off by discussing some of our personal experiences with AR and VR technology generally, but of course in the metaverse as well. Maybe you've tried Apple's new Vision Pro or own it. Who knows? I'm going to come to you first in a second, Alan, but I want to tell a story. I was on a flight the other day from DC, and the person in front of me pulled on their Apple Vision Pro on the plane and were clearly like watching a movie or something whilst they were doing it. And it was a really surreal moment because I was excited to see this thing in the wild like happening. But then also I'm just like, I also think he looks a bit silly. And I'm like, I remember that I having exact same opinion about AirPods when they first came out. I thought, that's dumb. Who needs that? You could just plug in a wired one. Now, of course, we all have it. I wonder if it's going to go on that trend. But it was really fascinating to see it out in the wild. But Alan, what's your personal experiences across these things? I know you're deep into this stuff.
I think it's not about what you think of the guy wearing the thing. It's whether he cares or not. Having a 100-inch or 180-inch screen to watch a movie while you fly is a good trade-off then rather than look at your iPad or the little screen in front of you on the chair in front of you. So, yeah, I think you're going to see this more and more. Actually, one of the things that I suggested for a marketing thing for Apple was to give people one on long flights. So you're going to San Francisco to New York. Here's an Apple Vision Pro. Drop it off on the way back. And if you don't return it, you bought it. So that kind of thing. And so I saw that happen with tablets back in the day when nobody had a tablet. And they're like, here, try this thing. And by the other end, you've got this tablet filled with movies. You're just like, whoa, this thing, how can I live without this now? So I think we're only beginning that. Apple Vision Pro is for pros. It is for designers and developers to build the future of the spatial computing web of information and apps and games. And so right now, Apple Vision Pro is just for developers, even though there's people in the public having it and we see all the influencers wearing it and stuff like that. So they're building hype while they're building an infrastructure. And a lot of people don't really remember the iPhone 1. When it launched, it had nothing. It had a calculator and there was no app store. There's no nothing. And so now an app developer wasn't really a job back then. And now it's a job for millions and millions of people. So spatial app developer isn't really a job, or it is now just becoming a job. And millions of people will develop apps, games, and solutions across enterprise, B2C, retail. Every facet of humanity will use this technology in some way or another.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, Alan. I think you're right. Everyone is looking at it with this curiosity of, I think I want the experience, but I don't know whether I'm ready to put myself out there. It feels like that Lone Nut video, that one guy dancing in a field.
Yep.
And then everyone's looking at them going, you're a crazy nut. And then all of a sudden the second person comes in, and then now mass hysteria. It's like everyone realizes this is the way to be.
Andrew,
it's going to be super fascinating.
For my whole life since I was 15, and you always have a catalyst, right? You're DJing a party, and when you start the party, there's nobody dancing, just to your point exactly. And then one, and then two, and then boom, you got a dance floor. And then everybody's got their hands up.
Yeah.
Before you know it, the party's over, and you got to go home.
Clearly never been to one of my
parties. I'm sorry,
parties.
Alan,
I'm
like, did you say you're a DJ?
I have been a DJ my whole life.
That is amazing.
You invented touchscreen technology for the music industry in 2010.
Of course you did.
Of course, yeah, I was going to say, if anyone who hasn't met Alan, is the answer to that is like,
an emulator, and I tried VR for the first time, and was like, oh my God, what the heck did I just put on my head? Because it was a concert and I was standing on stage. And as a DJ, that was my job. I was always on stage. But then seeing it in VR, I was like, oh my God, this allows everybody to have the same experience that I have standing on stage looking out in the crowd. Now, it turns out it's not the best view. You really actually want to be in the crowd looking at, but it's cool to be able to go up there, see it for a few minutes, and then go back to better seats. But I always thought that was a great use case, giving people perspective of things they could never do. You can't be the performer on stage. You're not allowed up there. So giving people the ability to be where they could never be. And Samsung came out with an ad campaign many years ago with their Samsung VR, and it was do what you can't. And I thought that was super cool, because if you're, let's say you need to train somebody in a nuclear reactor, well, you can't train in a nuclear reactor. It's live and you'll die. But you can train in a virtual one over and over again. If there's ever an emergency, then you can fix it. And so do what you can't is a really cool way to look at how VR can unlock superpowers for us.
Oh, I love that. Rebecca, what about you? What's some personal experiences for you around this
yes.
technology metaverse world?
So I can't say that I myself have tried. We talked about Apple Vision Pro, that this specific device, although I will say it is all over my social media. A few of my friends have gotten it, and by watching them try it on and watching their reaction videos, I feel like one of my kids watching reaction. I'm just watching unboxing videos of Apple Vision Pro. But I think the kind of light bulb use case that I had personally with VR, and more VR than AR, was during the pandemic. I have two kids, and we got that like Google Cardboard. Do you remember these things? It just like, folded up and you stuck your phone in it. And there were these like YouTube videos that would do this pseudo 360. It is not as good as the Apple Vision Pro. Okay, I'll just say that. But so then they could go to an amusement park and go on a roller coaster while we're all stuck at home, and they're bouncing off the walls and all of that. And so I think, Alan, to your point of do what you can't, like those are things that we could not do for an entire year. And so I think that it was an interesting moment for me when I realized, oh, this can actually be, it's not only is it entertainment, but it's like a point of connection, because then my two kids could ride the same roller coaster and talk about it. So I think just being able to like physically, if not experience it with your entire body, like visualize it, that's an experience that is over and above just watching a movie or watching a concert, to your point, Alan. I think that there is for sure an entertainment use case. And then when I think about what I do all day, every day, I just literally got off of one of these, is try to help brands visualize their first retail environment. I'm not a designer myself, but like work with a lot of designers. And one of the hardest things for founders to do if they've never opened a store is to actually picture what the environment looks like. And you can have 3D renderings and you can have all of these things, but like to be able to walk through a store and see it and see what it looks like and see what the customer is going to experience, I think is pretty valuable, especially for a flagship environment that you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on, to be able to do that, to make sure you get it right. And I think that kind of just moves it more into the world that I'm in all day, every day, but there's this entertainment and there's this utility use case for it for certain.
Yeah, and they're the ones that excite me the most, actually. I remember when the idea of AR came up and the most excitable use cases were even things like healthcare, like for dementia patients and those kinds of things. I thought that that helps you see and understand the technology a bit more, I think, and then adapting that into the real world is going to be just fascinating what you can do. Michael, what about you, mate?
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, so I was never a DJ, but when I was a teenager, I worked for a local celebrity DJ here in New Jersey, a guy by the name of Mike Del Tufo. And I was his cart lumper. We used to take the crates back then. He'd bring 6, 7, 8 crates of actual records to each gig. So I'd lump the equipment and patch in the electricity and carry the crates around. And for that, I got to meet a lot of pretty girls. But that's a story for another day. Yeah, so my experience in AR, VR, AI is coming from a practical implementation point of view, especially as it circles back to retail and digital commerce. I've been implementing AR and VR programs and virtual world programs for brands, retailers, and CPGs for a couple of years, some of it with the help of an inspiration of Alan, full disclosure, and he's been a real source of light and enlightenment to me in that world. But to me, it comes back down to I've maintained for a couple of years that we're heading towards from e-commerce to immersive commerce, right? That the experience of shopping online surprisingly isn't all that different than it was 5 or 10 years ago. You're still dealing with a flat two-dimensional screen. You're scrolling, clicking on a product picture, scrolling, clicking on a product description. It just hasn't changed in 90% of cases, right? Which is a real shame because people are growing bored. It's why I think e-commerce isn't growing as fast as it should be. So what's the answer? And the answer I came up with is we evolve e-commerce into something called immersive commerce. And by using AR, VR, ER, spatial computing, 3D product pictures, dynamic shoppable video, dynamic shoppable blogs, live streaming, you throw all this into the mix. And the idea is to take e-commerce from a flat, two-dimensional, non-immersive, boring act of buying into a three-dimensional, immersive, dynamic act of shopping. And let's put fun back in.
Dude, can we just bottle that and be like, here, this is the way that it should be done. Michael, you articulate it in ways that other people cannot. It's one of the things that I say is it's got to be social. I've never invited somebody to Amazon to come look over my shoulder while I shop on Amazon, ever. It's not a thing. Maybe my family coming here. Am I buying this one or this one? Quick, get out of my way. But it's not social. I love it.
Yeah, and it's not social. And by the way, guys, this applies to digital shopping experiences as much as it does the physical, right? So the idea is how do you make the store more immersive, the physical store? How do you make the screen shopping more immersive? And then how do you connect those two immersive experiences? And so we've seen some proto early versions of this where you can go into a store and lift up your app and see the products come off the screen and pricing and information. I think we're just at the beginning of that. But again, the other way, and I'll finish with this, that I'm involved is as an investor and as representing people who are involved in capital raise and M&A. I get a front row seat to a dozen of these companies every week. And so I have a really keen sense of what's developing out there. And it's absolutely amazing. And so when we talk about AR, VR, ER, and now AI, if anybody is holding the notion that AI is the next quote unquote metaverse, which we'll probably talk about in a few minutes, they have simply no idea how it's already being deployed and what's coming down the line.
Without a doubt. I think the description I think matters most. As retail as a sector, I think we often get caught up in the nomenclature, debating what we should call it and what it means and what's included rather than actually experimenting with it and running at what the use cases that make sense for us. And that's why I think seeing people, especially with AI, to your point, not that I want to divert the topic, but like people are just leaning in now and putting it to work in things that they knew that they wanted to solve for. And I think this kind of immersive commerce, which is 100% stealing that from you today, Michael. I think that idea of how do you just create a more immersive brand experience, no matter where it is, I think is incredibly smart. Like I think the metaverse itself, I'm going to go to that nomenclature piece. It's, you know, like so many things in retail gets thrown up as this kind of hype. This is the thing that you can't avoid when you're at the conference. A couple of years ago, it was number one at Shop Talk and every other event that year. And it was promised back then to be this revolutionary thing. It's like, and some people led it to this is why stores are going to die. And that, so it got conflated negatively with that viewpoint too, which it was obviously crap as we all know it. But it became this hyped piece that then seemed to fall off the ledge in terms of conversations. Why do we think what was promised back then hasn't necessarily translated through? Alan, I'll start with you. Blue Yonder is the world leader in retail digital supply chain transformations and omnichannel commerce fulfillment. Their end-to-end cognitive business platform enables retailers and logistics providers to best fulfill customer demand from planning through delivery. With Blue Yonder, you'll unify your data, supply chain, and retail commerce operations to unlock new business opportunities and drive automation, control, and orchestration to enable more profitable, sustainable business decisions. Blue Yonder, fulfill your potential.
I think the term metaverse, first of all, metaverse is our company's name. We called it that in 2016. So maybe we had a crystal ball or something. But to be honest, we didn't think that the whole world would move towards metaverse as the future of the internet. And it wasn't just virtual, augmented, mixed reality, 3D, the visual aspects, but it was also blockchain, crypto, loyalty programs, Web3 was lumped in there. And then, you know, there was also AI, but people didn't, it wasn't like the AI hype wave was here yet. It, you know, but we had computer vision, SLAM algorithms. We had the ability to create images. Like that's, you know, been a thing for a while. And then all of a sudden, OpenAI came along with ChatGPT on November 30th, 2022, I believe it was, and just blew everybody's minds. And it's hard not to just have, with the sheer amount of things that are happening in AI, it's hard not to be enamored by it and just go to it. But what people are realizing now after the hype wave of metaverse went down through the trough of disillusionment, and then now the hype wave of AI is there, people are realizing, oh, they all go together. It's not like one versus the other. We're in a technological revolution where all of these things together combine to make a new experience for the customer. So if you, for example, take the metaverse, right? A place where people go and whether they're on a computer, on a phone, on a VR headset, but they go in and they go together as avatars and walk around a retail store, let's say, for example. There's examples of this by Obsess. You can go on Spatial and see this. You can go on Roblox. I actually just finished an article, Fortnite versus Roblox versus your own private verse. And so I'll be sharing that out soon. But the idea behind all of this is that you're going to be in there looking at a store, and that store will have products based on your likes. So we'll be using AI to select the items that are in there for you. You'll also be able to go up to a store representative that you'll maybe be able to click, I want to speak to a human or an AI, because some people don't want to speak to humans. They want to speak to an AI, and they'll be able to have a conversation with an avatar of a human or an AI, which will be great. And the other thing you'll be able to do is you'll be able to lock in loyalty through Web3, and you'll be able to sell that loyalty on the open market through chains and stuff like this. So I think there's a real interesting dynamic happening where you have the read and write of Web 2, but now you have the read, write, and own of Web 3. So people will own digital assets. They'll own the right to distribute those and sell those as they need. Actually, the SEC just said some crypto coins were considered securities. So the rules are changing around it too. But I think AI is just so easy to deploy compared to the others, and it's actually making things like XR and virtual reality easier to deploy, because now there's text to video. Let's say we can make a video in 10 seconds with Sora. I can do text to image with Midjourney. I can do text to script on ChatGPT. But now there's going to be text to 3D, and we're already starting to see this, where I can do text to 3D object or one photograph. I can take photographs of the, let's say, shoes, and it'll automatically spit out the 3D object for me, which I can then use in a game engine. I could use in Roblox and Fortnite and whatever I want to use it for. Once you have the 3D asset, I wrote another article called The Value of 3D Assets Across the Enterprise, because let's say you design shoes in 3D. That 3D asset's in super high res for manufacturing. You can scale it down and use it for Fortnite. You can scale it down even further and use it in Roblox. You can scale it down and use it in your own verse. So I think the we're only scratching the surface of how all of these technologies together come together to make the best consumer experience, and it will just keep getting better and better. And like Michael said, we're going to see this confluence of real world things where I went into a store the other day. There was what I call it. They make the big jackets, Canada Goose. And in their store, they have a minus 20 fridge that you walk into, and it's all decorated and stuff, but it's like ice on the walls, and you put the coat on to see how warm it is. And it's an experience that I won't forget. I went and tried on a coat in a minus 20 fridge in a store. And when I say fridge, it's 20 feet long. It's huge. And so experiences will always be the driver for real brand engagement. It's not just ruthless procurement of goods from China, socks and stuff on Amazon. There's no experience there, just buying things. Buying and shopping are two different things, and retail is really only scratching the surface on how to use all these technologies to enhance that for everyone.
I think that's a beautiful statement of what the intent could be for these types of things, right? Is how do you create, going back to the immersive commerce kind of theme, these experiences around my brand, regardless of the channel that I'm actually using them in. I think that's fantastic. Rebecca, you work with a lot of brands my internet's obviously going buggers. Rebecca, you work with a lot of brands that are looking to get into the physical world, and I'm excited to see and hear from you how people are talking about this, especially if it's something that they're coming from that digitally native space. This is a language they probably understand better than, say, some incumbent retailers do. How are they talking about it?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I think there are some brands that are more, let's call it like pro AR, VR, metaverse than others. And I think there are some like use cases that make more sense than others. For example, in the furniture space, I've worked with a couple of furniture brands. This makes a ton of sense, right? You need to be able to visualize a piece of furniture in your home or visualize an entire room. That makes a lot of sense. That's a little bit of an obvious one that's maybe less obvious, but that has come up quite a bit has been like in the intimate space, right? How do I get the perfect fit for my intimate apparel, right? And so there's these things like some body scan technology, which like at its very nascent level was frankly not very good. But then I think when paired with a human interaction, it can actually be quite compelling. You have someone who's an expert in fittings, but then you also have a piece of technology that can show you different styles, et cetera. I think that that's one way. I will say there are, on the flip side, there are some brands that are like, you know what? We're just actually going back to basics. And yes, we grew up digitally native or D2C or whatever you want to call them these days. But if we're going to build a physical environment, we're not going to overly technologize it, if that's even a word, right? If that's even a term. So I think they are more interested in, rather than obvious screens or body scanners or things like that, like how can we use this technology, specifically AI, to make the customer experience better with respect to what products they may want to purchase in the future based on the products they purchased in the past. I think there's a lot of brands really interested in the potential for clienteling. Like Alan, what you were saying, like with a chatbot, not that they think of them like that, but with a virtual stylist. Okay, let's call it that, like with a virtual stylist. And I think that piece of technology can look into the future and see what the product line is for the next 18 months and say, hey, customer, here's something that you may want in the future to purchase based on your past history. And I think that's very compelling because it's all about, of course, repeat purchase rate, brand affinity, customer lifetime value across multiple channels, et cetera.
Yeah, it's super interesting to see. And aligned with that, Michael, you, as you mentioned before, get the chance to talk to a lot of the brands who are innovating in this space. How do you see the journey from the hype a couple of years ago to today and how the metaverse is popping up in the real world?
Yeah, so when the metaverse hype cycle started, I had tons of clients in the brand, CPG, retail, manufacturing world asking me to help them make sense of it. I think I gave them good counsel in the way of, I framed it as, guys, don't worry about the metaverse. And that THE is very important here because I think that word painted a picture in people's minds of a single all-encompassing digital space that everybody and their parents were going to migrate to. And it's where we do our banking and our shopping and our socializing. And so the metaverse, right? From a commercial point of view, from a retail or brand point of view, my counsel then, and it remains so now, is to think of the metaverse, to Alan's point, is something that 10,000 companies and millions of people are slowly developing over an elongated time frame that will fundamentally change the way we experience the digital world. Okay, that's long term. My counsel then and now is, so put that in a corner and keep that in your long-term view. In the shorter-term view, understand that virtual worlds for a brand or retailer can make an impact. Virtual spaces. So we're not, the point was never to tell retail CEOs that if you didn't shut down your stores and open up a metaverse for your brand, that you were doomed. It was rather, how can virtual spaces enhance what you're doing in your physical store footprint, what you're doing with your e-commerce? I think a great example is if you look at Kiehl's, the high-end body care company. Kiehl's has a beautifully built virtual space, virtual flagship. It's not overly complicated. It doesn't require you to dive layer after layer like a quest-led video game, but it's a really cool space where they have a digital host and they have products and they have some quizzes and some gamification. And guess what, guys? It turns out that the conversion rates for customers who step into that virtual space is 5 to 6x what it is for the customers who never step foot in that space. All right. Another example. And when we talk about, and by the way, it's very important to interject the term unified commerce here, right? Because a big part of what all of these ER, AR, VR, 3D, all of that, the immersive experiences, is at the heart of unifying your commerce, right? The integration of online, offline technology, content, and supply chain to build an ecosystem, right? So you start with unified commerce, and then you ask, how do I build immersive experiences in a unified commerce context, right? Okay, so we did a live streaming event for a top 10 New York-based luxury fashion brand. And we did it from their flagship store in Lower Manhattan. And how'd it work out? In 2 hours, we sold more than that flagship store sells in a month. Okay. But that was the least impressive metric. We did a 4-week tracking afterwards, and foot traffic to that physical store went up 60% in the following 4 weeks. Website traffic went up 50% in the following 4 weeks. Average order volume in both environments went up 35% in the following 4 weeks. If that doesn't tell you the power of what unified commerce and immersive commerce are, then I can't think of a better example to share. For people listening, the takeaway off of that is, don't worry about the metaverse. The metaverse will take care of itself. Create virtual immersive experiences, number one. And number two, in a world where the cost of consumer acquisition is higher than it's ever been, right? Some brands are paying $450 per acquisition. 2 years ago, they were paying $150 for that same acquisition. That makes margin and profit really difficult, whether you're in a store or online. So if you're looking for ways to lower consumer acquisition costs and ultimately fulfill your mission of increased traffic, increased conversion, increased AOV, increased LTV, then AR, VR, and immersive commerce is your answer.
I think beautifully said, as always, Michael. And the definitional piece to me actually is always one that I get asked a lot. In the work that I do, which is how do you do things? How do you build things? How do you build the processes internally to better get stuff done? People always ask, should we be looking at the metaverse? Should we be looking at this? I'm like, you keep doing what you're doing, which is find the problems that you need to solve or the opportunities you want to chase. The enablers like AR or VR or like immersive commerce or unified commerce will be the answers potentially to those things. But don't take your eyes off the prize. Don't get excited by the silver shiny thing in the corner. But the definitional one, I think, is a super interesting one. If there was your language there, Michael, it was this all-encompassing thing that meant that it meant nothing. It had so many things in it, it lost its definition.
Yeah.
Alan, you've been here at the forefront of this for a long time. You even named your company this nearly a decade ago, which blows my mind. I'm going to ask you the lotto numbers next. But the how do you talk about it when people say, what is this thing?
We look at it as it's just the future of the internet. And the internet that we have today has videos in it, has social media, it has text, it has rich media. But the internet of tomorrow, you'll, instead of scrolling up and down and left and right and watching videos, that will all still be there, but you'll be able to go into it like a video game and walk around and have the third dimension as well. And whether you do that from a phone, a tablet, computer, or a headset, doesn't matter. But it also will have AI pervasive throughout it. We already have AI and you don't realize, you won't know it's AI. It'll just be part of the experience. Like when you go on social media and you go on TikTok, and even if you wipe your TikTok out and start over again, within a few minutes, the algorithm's like, oh, you like this and this, because the algorithms are good. And they know if you hover on something a little bit longer, that is an intent. The algorithms are already built into the social media, just get more pervasive. And we're also going to start to see a new way for brands to leverage these technologies across different things. For example, if you want to make ads, you can go on Canva now as a designer. And you can drop, let's say you make something beautiful in Photoshop, right? You're a graphic artist and you're like really talented. You put that together, you drop it into Canva, and they have this new thing called Mix Up or something. You press a button and now it spits it out for all the different formats of social media. So it spits it out in the format for TikTok, in the format for Instagram, in the format for Facebook. And because they're all different, 16 by 9, 19 by 16, whatever. They're all different formats. And it just does it automatically for you. Boom. You want to change all the backgrounds? You hit another button. Boom, all the backgrounds are changed. So we're in this era where the power of professional graphics design and professional, you know, design in general. I just found a thing this morning called Palazzo.ai. I think Kim Kardashian's in it or somebody, but it's really incredible. You literally go through, you pick which room you like. I like this room and this room out of 10. You pick another one. I like this one and this one. You do this 10 times and it spits out your own custom designed space. And then you can go in and do that for your kitchen and your living room, whatever. And so hyper-personalized AI, blockchain, being able to own assets throughout this as well. I think all of them together really make up the metaverse. It's the internet that we had plus AI, blockchain, and XR all together. And now you have the metaverse.
Yeah, these incredible enablers of people's imaginations now being let loose on it. Rebecca, what's your view here as we talk through this kind of traditional, this hype that built up into this all-encompassing term that people freaked out about, to then all of a sudden now being able to, you know, translate our real-world problems, and the brands that you're speaking to would have this conversation with you regularly, I imagine, of like translating this into use cases. How do you think about the definition of it all?
Adobe and Microsoft have come together to unite data, content, and processes, helping retailers transform every interaction along the customer journey to deliver the experiences customers expect. Unite cross-channel customer data with full-scale activation capabilities to deliver personalized and AI-driven retail experiences. With more than 60 out-of-the-box product integrations, their joint offering helps retailers increase value from technology investments while maximizing the value of first-party data. Connect the dots with Connected Clouds, Adobe and Microsoft, a partnership that unlocks possible.
Yeah, thanks for making me go after Alan, the guy whose company is literally named Metaverse. No, I think, look, in addition to what Alan's, actually to back up and just answer your question about how these brands, because look, I work with mostly like direct to consumer, your kind of classic definition of direct to consumer brands, digitally native, looking to move into physical. They are not doing what like Chanel did, for example, and like making tons of handbags in the metaverse and, you know, sticking them into whatever, Roblox and Decentraland and I don't wherever else they stuck them. I think they're thinking about how practically can this new, I like the way Alan described it, internet plus, right? It is the internet plus the AI, you know, all of these other things that kind of inform our data set. How can we make that work for us to, one, create better products, two, reach more customers, and three, be more profitable, right? And so I think the way, I don't know that's necessarily a definition, but like the way that they're approaching it is like, how can we toe in the water into this quote unquote metaverse, right? So that we can actually test things. And it's okay if they fail. Like testing is okay. That's fine. Did the handbag sell in Roblox? I don't know. But let's test things without expending too much bandwidth here and keeping our core that we know makes money, but like we know eventually that's going to run out. I think it was Michael that said the cost of customer acquisition is rising. It's almost untenable. You can't even acquire a customer on Facebook without spending a ton of money or social media broadly. So I think that's more how these brands are thinking about it, is not like, how do I build an entire store in the quote unquote metaverse, but how do we use these tools in a really practical way to serve our customers better and ultimately, let's face it, make more money for our brand.
And rock up where they are. And if they happen to be in the metaverse already, then you're missing an opportunity by not being there. But if your customer has no interest in being there, then perhaps it's a sandbox idea and that's all for you.
Exactly. Bubble should be in the metaverse.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So there you go.
One question that is really, I think, probably on the minds of the people, if you're bought into the idea of immersive commerce, so we called it V-stores, but immersive commerce sounds way better. The idea of having a virtual store, an immersive store, I think the main question is, where do you start? And I'd defer to Michael and Rebecca for this, but where do you start? If you're bought into this idea of, oh, wow, we want to have an immersive commerce store, how do we get started? Where do we start?
So, yeah, and I'm glad you asked that, because I think where some leaders at brands, retailers, CPGs have a concern is it sounds a lot harder and more expensive than it actually is, number one, just from an enterprise point of view. From a technology point of view, it sounds to them like you need to do a rip and replace job, as we say in the tech world, that you're going to have to rip out your tech stack and replace it completely for this new world. And that's just not true. So you still hear people talking about digital transformation, especially in retail, which is still behind technologically compared to most industries. And I stop them in their tracks and I say, listen, forget digital transformation. All of our lives and all of our businesses have been fully digitally transformed over the last 20 years. It's done. The process of digital transformation is over. You might not be interfacing or embracing every aspect of digital transformation, but it's done. It's over, right? So the question is, where do you start? Start with digital enablement. Look at your tech stack today and say, is it being leveraged for all of the things it can do that it's capable of? Or is it being used for things that are now made archaic and you should be focusing that tech towards other ends and means and goals? Number one. And then number two, look at all of the beautiful technology and tools that are out there, the enabling technology that is relatively cheap and relatively easy to stand up, plug, test, and pull out if you don't need it, right? If you want to experiment with shoppable video, you can basically, for $80 a month, do 10 shoppable videos. Okay, so 6 months of shoppable video experimentation is going to cost you $600 and a few hours to make some video. Why wouldn't you?
Why is that even a question?
It's a huge question, though, but it's a huge question. So I think just start with the basics. It's not rip and replace on technology, and that you have easily stood up things you can experiment with. That's number one. Number two, listen, what's going to motivate people in the end of the day is money and profitability. Are you hitting the margins you want? Are you hitting the profitability you want? And how are you doing on the big four KPIs, right? Again, whether you're running a store, online, offline, whatever, at the end of the day, it's still about traffic, conversions, AOV, and LTV. Are you hitting the mark there? And if the answer is in any way, shape, or form, no to hitting the big four KPIs and no to margin and profitability, and there's room to improve, start there and say, what is the financial case to be made for doing this? That's where you start. And so then once you have that mind frame in place, then you can say, all right, let's experiment with some shoppable video. Let's experiment with 3D product. Why didn't we do 3D products before, right? Somebody in the room is going to say, oh, we tried that and we looked into it 2 years ago. And the IT department had a meltdown because if we put all these 3D product pages, it would take us 7.5 minutes for our page to paint and we'd lose all our customers. Guess what, dude? And here's where AI comes in. There are companies out there now who use AI to shrink a 3D object down to the size of a static picture. right? So blowing up your website metrics isn't a problem anymore, but you don't know that, right? You don't know that.
The other thing that I realize is if people start experimenting, they could experiment and be like, okay, it took us 7 minutes to load and we it wasn't enough. So maybe we put a button and a little like, little video while it's loading. And then what we want to know is, does this convert? Do people actually want to convert? And if you never get started, you'll never get started. It just, you keep putting it off and putting it off. So the people who started years ago worked through all the bugs, worked through all the problems, and are now doing it at scale. And so it's, for, here's a prime example, IKEA, for, oh man, almost over a decade, they've been working in 3D. And they build every single one of their objects, of their products in 3D first. They don't do photographs at all anymore, ever, in the company. So all the product photographs are done using Unreal Engine. And they put them in super high res, and they can change the room. So the same products can be sold in Japan and America without having to hire photography crews in America and Japan, because they're different photographs, right? How you use furniture, maybe the same desk, but it looks different in Japan as it does in America. And so being able to generate those images on the fly as you need, incredible. And those objects exist as 3D objects. So now you have them, you can use them for e-commerce.
In perpetuity, right? You can take them anywhere. All right, one final question for each of you. Quick fire round. It's going to be a little choose your own adventure-y, because I like to throw things up. How do you see the future playing out for these technologies in the world of commerce? Or if you'd prefer, what do you wish would happen? What's this kind of, man, if I could manifest physically or virtually, or bad choice of words, Andrew. Anyway, this kind of reality of future in commerce using this stuff as tech, how would you go? I'm going to start with you, Alan. I think that's the fairest.
So I think where it is going is that immersive experiences are here to stay. There's 3.5 billion gamers in the world who I self-identify as gamers and are used to playing Roblox and Fortnite and virtual world games and this sort of thing. And so those people just expect this. The other, let's say, 4.5 billion people on the planet, it's not a far stretch. They know how to play a video now and they know how to scroll a website. It's not a far stretch to figure out how to walk through a virtual space. So this technology is coming, whether people like it or not. And I think what will happen is that AI will just make it easier and easier for everyone to be a creator. So imagine now you can say to your customers, hey, you can go through my AI algorithm and it will spit out some design cues for you. And you're like, I like that one. And you can design your own virtual space to have virtual meetings with your friends. And those products in there, you can say, oh, I want this tree. And like Roblox sells you a tree, right? You can put it in there. But then you can say, oh, I want to have this in my own home. And you can have shoppable virtual worlds where you just click the button and it says, you sure you want to buy? Yes, I want to buy. And it's not purchasing from the virtual world. You don't have to buy it in Robux. You can buy it with your credit card and have that delivered to your house. The seamless integration of buying a virtual item and a physical item and having them delivered, it should be as seamless as going to the store and buying it and bringing it home. So I think this is going to just, AI just lights it on fire because everybody becomes a creator at that point.
Yeah, I think that world of imagination is absolutely phenomenal. Although it scares me considering that my kiddo plays both of those games and I genuinely have no clue what's happening. Michael?
Yeah, I think the way I wish things would progress is, and I think it's the track things are on now from a retail point of view, right? And being clear that retail is everywhere, right? Retail is physical stores. Retail is D2C. Retail is in social. Retail is in video games. Retail is everywhere, right? So let's just use the catch-all term retail, that the retail world embraces the power of immersive experiences and technologies to create not just better experiences online, but in the physical store itself, right? And one of our friends at Rethink Retail, Neil Saunders, has been documenting what the inside of a Macy's looks like for the better part of a couple of years. And you compare those pictures to what happens inside of a Lego store or what happens inside of a camp store or how Lego connects their online and offline worlds. I think we're just at the beginning of a period where that can be done by virtually everybody to create better experiences for consumers, for store associates, for everybody associated with the brand or the retail entity, and that more companies start to be more open-minded about what can be done and how it can be beneficial to them.
Love it. Thank you, Michael. And Rebecca, bring us home. Futures or dreams of the metaverse and or its subsidiaries?
Yeah, I was afraid Michael was going to take mine, but you didn't. I'm going to riff on it just slightly. But similar to what Michael said, my wish, I'm going to go that route, pick door number two, is that this becomes, and it will, becomes easier for brands to say yes to. And I'm talking about these young up and coming brands. It needs to be easier and I don't know if less confusing is the right term or just like less arduous to experiment in these spaces. Right now, I think there is a fear and I think some of it is easy, but they don't realize it. Like, just like you all mentioned. So my hope is to see more experimentation to confirm which channels are, you know, the ones that they should focus on. And so I think that's my desire and wish, and it's coming. It is coming. I have confidence.
I couldn't have worded it any better. I love the idea of experimentation. Experimentation is everything. What a fantastic conversation. Alan, Rebecca, and Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. I've learned an awful lot, and it's a gift for me. So I appreciate you three joining us. Thank you so much. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of Retail Therapy.
Thank you for listening to the Rethink Retail podcast. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show, apply at rethink.industries/podcast guest. That's rethink.industries/podcast guest. Follow us on Twitter at rethink_retail and show some love by subscribing on iTunes podcast app. Until next time.